An ITEC Air 737 is down in Kyrgyzstan. The UAV endurance record is broken by more than a day. And wait till you hear the latest tactic by an airline for saving weight. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, August 26th, 2008. Another airliner is down. At least 68 people have died in the crash of an ITEC Air 737 owned by the Kyrgyz carrier ITEC Air and operated by Iran Osman Airlines. The plane went down near Manas International Airport near Kyrgyzstan's capital of Bishkek. 90 people were reported on board. 22 survivors are reported by media in the area. The flight was bound for Mashhad, Iran. Airport officials say the crew reported a technical problem 10 minutes into the flight. The aircraft was in the process of returning to the field when it went down. There's no word yet on a possible cause. ITEC Air was banned from operating in European airspace July 24th over safety concerns. A solar-powered, unmanned aerial vehicle called the Zephyr has raised the bar in a big way. The craft flew for 82 hours, 37 minutes late last month over the U.S. Army's Yuma Proving Ground in Arizona. That blows away the Global Hawk's best of 30 hours, 24 minutes, and even Zephyr's previous best of 54 hours achieved last year. The UK Ministry of Defense has funded development of the Zephyr. The U.S. Department of Defense funded the demonstration flight. The Zephyr is made of carbon fiber and launched by hand. In daylight, it flies on solar power generated by amorphous silicon solar arrays no thicker than sheets of paper that cover the aircraft's wings. At night, it runs on rechargeable lithium sulfur batteries. The flight at Yuma happened July 28th through the 31st in temperatures as high as 113 degrees Fahrenheit. Zephyr was flown on autopilot and via satellite communications to a maximum altitude of more than 60,000 feet. Potential applications include Earth observation and communications relay in support of a range of defense, security, and civil requirements. In the quest to save fuel and shave every possible ounce of weight from their aircraft, airlines have tried everything from charging extra for checked bags to jettisoning in-flight entertainment systems. Now, Air Canada's regional affiliate, Jazz, has rearranged its routes along the east coast slightly to stay always within 50 nautical miles of the shoreline. That allows the airline to save weight on its planes by removing life vests. So now, when the flight attendant reminds you that your seat cushion can be used as a flotation device in the event of a water landing, you'd better pay attention. It'll be your only flotation device. Some people have a problem with that. Tom Hinton, the former director for aviation at Canada's Transportation Safety Board, says those cushions were never intended to be a primary means of survival. Quote, "Any airplane has to be evacuated within a couple of minutes, and if you've got everybody standing up in the aisles trying to tear up their seat cushion and carry it under their arms and get out a hatch, it's really going to slow things down. The person has to hold on to it, and the difficulty there is if the water is cold, you can't hang on very long before your fingers and your hands won't respond," unquote. If the water is cold, have you ever gone swimming off the east coast of Canada? On a typical 75-seat aircraft, removing the life vests will save an estimated 85 pounds. Given the headlines this year about airworthiness directives and missed safety inspections and all the union rhetoric, you might think airline safety in the U.S. was in bad shape. But the International Civil Aviation Organization, a United Nations agency that oversees international civil aviation, gave the U.S. a score of 91 out of 100 in a new safety audit released on Monday. FAA Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill says the score, quote, "validates our system's approach to safety. The results show that our priorities are in the right place," unquote. The U.S. score, which was well above the global average of 56, reflected U.S. compliance with over 9,500 international safety standards. The team of ICAO auditors interviewed technical experts and conducted site visits to government and industry facilities to assess safety oversight. The Universal Safety Oversight Audit Program was established by ICAO in 1995 at the urging of the United States. It provides authorities throughout the world valuable information on the overall health and effectiveness of their airspace systems. Up next on ANN, Russia ignores the Georgian ceasefire agreement. Pilot union rhetoric threatens scaring passengers away. And an NTSB team is headed for Guatemala. You're listening to Aero News.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 26th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. A Pentagon official charged on Monday that Russia continues to defy international calls for the country to pull its forces out of Georgia, and humanitarian operations continue. DOD spokesman Brian Whitman said Russian troops continue to occupy the breakaway region of South Ossetia and to maintain troops in Gori, a Georgian city that's the gateway to South Ossetia. Quote, "It is fair to say they are still not living up to the terms of the ceasefire agreement," unquote. The Russian Duma, that's the equivalent of the U.S. House of Representatives, has called on the government to recognize the provinces of South Ossetia and Abkhazia as independent from Georgia. Meanwhile, Whitman says about 100 U.S. military and DOD civilian personnel are in Georgia coordinating the aid. C-17 Globemaster transport aircraft are being supported by U.S. Navy ships. Whitman says cots, bedding, mattresses, sleeping bags, small tents, mobile kitchen units, and medical supplies are still in need and are priorities. The U.S. airlines are already seeing passenger traffic decline as fares and fees rise, and many will affect capacity cuts next week. The last thing the airlines need right now, especially in a week filled with accident reports, is for pilots to suggest airline policy is creating a risk that airliners will run out of fuel in the air. But the unions are all about looking for leverage, and Reuters reports pilot unions at American and U.S. Airways are accusing management of bullying pilots into flying with uncomfortably low fuel levels. Terry Tripler of TriplerTravel.com calls it a hot-button issue which could make travelers switch brands or simply decide not to fly at all. Quote, "You don't want to mess around with it. It creates a bad public relations image," unquote. The U.S. Airline Pilots Association at U.S. Airways has complained that pilots have been selected for mandatory training based on their decisions to add extra fuel to some flights. The increased weight makes the planes more expensive to fly, and the airlines hate that. The union says that the training is actually a disciplinary action. The Allied Pilots Association, which represents pilots at American, has voiced a similar complaint. David Castelvetter, spokesman for the Air Transport Association, denies it's a safety issue. Quote, "This is more union politics than anything else. All the airlines are doing is asking the crews to be vigilant," unquote. The FAA says there's been no new trend in emergency landings to suggest fuel levels are an issue. So is this just an attempt by the unions to make things uncomfortable for their employers? Tripler notes, quote, "Pilots obviously believe it would have an impact on bookings or they wouldn't be making it public," unquote. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board is sending a team of investigators to Cabanas, Zacapa, Guatemala to assist in the investigation of Sunday's accident in which a Cessna 208 Caravan turboprop crashed during a forced landing. The board says the airplane was being operated by Aero Ruta Maya Airlines. The Associated Press reports the aircraft was transporting U.S. humanitarian workers when it crashed in a field about 60 miles east of Guatemala City. The accident happened about 45 minutes after takeoff. Civil Aviation Director Jose Carlos said the pilots reported an emergency and said they would try to make an emergency landing. Authorities say 8 passengers died along with the plane's Guatemalan crew. There were at least 2 survivors reported, including 19-year-old Sarah Jensen. She told the AP she and her family were flying to a village near El Ester to build homes for Utah-based relief group Choice Humanitarian. Her brother and father were both lost in the crash. Her mother is in a local medical facility with severe burns. The NTSB team will include technical advisors from the FAA and Cessna. The $10 million expansion of Oxford Aviation in Maine has been scuttled by the sudden pullout of an investor. Company President Jim Horowitz told the Portland Press Herald the new facility at the Sanford Regional Airport was planned to take advantage of a boom in the refurbishment of business jets. The company's original facility at Oxford County Regional Airport will remain in operation. The investment firm backing the deal was Oso LLC, which was already $400,000 into the project when it bailed. The city of Sanford had spent another $300,000 demolishing a World War II-era hangar at the Sanford Airport to clear land for Oxford's planned 96,000-square-foot building. Oso President Robert Tenenbaum declined comment on why negotiations broke down, but did say his firm might be interested in backing another operator for the facility if a lease was to become available. There's still a chance Oxford can press on its own with a scaled-down project at the airport. State Economic Development Commissioner John Richardson says if nothing else, at least the land's been cleared for whoever its next tenant will be. Still ahead, a two-time world balloon champion designs events to challenge his peers. The retirement of NASA's shuttle fleet ends the lifting body era. And today's flight attendants have a much tougher job. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, August 26th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Entrants in the U.S. National Hot Air Balloon Championship this week will face a challenging field of 50 competitors. They'll also face David Levin of Boulder, Colorado. As event director, he won't be flying, but he is selecting the targets and setting up the parameters for the competition, and he's a two-time world champion himself. To make things even more interesting, he'll be assisted by another of the world's top ballooning competition directors, Mathis de Bruin of the Netherlands. This will be a little like playing a golf tournament on a course designed by Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. This week's event runs tomorrow through Monday in Anderson, South Carolina, south of Greenville on the border with Georgia. Next month, Levin will be event director at the World Championships in Hofkirchen, Austria. The retirement of NASA's space shuttle fleet in 2010 will bring to a close an era that opened in the Antelope Valley nearly a half century ago. The vehicle which began that era, the M2F1, was the world's first manned lifting body, made of wood with an internal frame of steel tubes, and it looked like a bathtub sitting on a tricycle and had no wings. The lifting body was conceived by NASA engineers at the Ames Research Center as an alternative to space capsules returning to Earth dangling under parachutes. A lifting body was not a conventional winged aircraft, but rather used air flowing over its fuselage to generate lift. The hope was to re-enter the atmosphere and land on a runway like a conventional airplane. The idea met with skepticism among engineers, but Dale Reed of the NASA Flight Research Center, which is now the Dryden Flight Research Center, got excited enough to build and test a series of small balsa wood and tissue paper lifting bodies. When the time came to build a full-size prototype, NASA turned to sailplane builder Gus Briegleb at the El Mirage Airport, 40 miles from the center. The steel frame was built in a curtained-off section of Briegleb's hangar with a sign that read, Wright's Bicycle Shop. Using volunteer help from center personnel, Reed kept the cost of building the M2F1 to about $30,000. Because the M2F1 was unpowered, a tow vehicle was required. Walter Whitey Whiteside, who was a hot rod enthusiast working at the center, was sent to purchase a new 1963 Pontiac convertible. Following modification at two race shops, the the car could reach 110 miles per hour with the M2 F1 in tow. During a second attempt to fly the design, on April 5, 1963, NASA research pilot Milt Thompson got airborne. After several flights, he was able to remain aloft for the whole 4 minutes of the run. A few weeks later, a C-47 towed the M2 F1 to 5,200 feet above the lake bed, allowing a flight of almost 2 minutes. The M2 F1 handled well. Subsequent manned lifting bodies set the stage for construction of the space shuttles. The M2 F1 was restored in the mid-1990s and returned to NASA Dryden in August of 97, and it remains on display there today. 40 years ago, openings for airline flight attendants drew mostly attractive young women interested in travel and glamour. Today, given the need to face passengers angry over rising fees and declining service, you might just want a psychology degree and a black belt. Whether it's $5 snacks on Northwest, $7 pillows on JetBlue, $15 first bags on United, or tarmac strandings on American, it's the flight attendants who face the occasional outbursts of frustrated passengers. Roland Rust, who's executive director of the Center for Excellence in Service at the University of Maryland and an expert on airline service, says the job has become 1,000 times tougher. He tells the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, quote, "The flight attendant has to deal with a bunch of surly passengers. It's a nasty work environment," unquote. Michael Boyd, an airline industry expert from Denver, tells the paper the job has become much harder than it was even a year ago. Quote, "Airlines have increasingly stupid rules they inflict on people. If a flight is canceled, good customer services put them on the first available flight. Today, some say we can't do that. We'll have to charge $25, and the flight attendants are stuck dealing with this stuff," unquote. Boyd says, however, there may be one upside in the new reality, higher pay. Quote, "I could see the flight attendants making the argument, hey, it's tough out there, so we want some compensation," unquote. And finally, one angry passenger flight attendants don't generally see is the bumped passenger. But the New York Times predicts there will be more of them after Labor Day, when several airlines intentionally shrink their fleets to fight rising costs. The U.S. Department of Transportation says that in the first half of 2008, out of 282 million total airline passengers, 343,000, or about a tenth of a percent, were bumped from their flights. Most agreed to give up their seats voluntarily, but a little more than 1 in 10,000 weren't given a choice. Historically, airlines have overbooked their flights by about 15%. In the past, if you missed your flight, you'd catch the next one. This fall, in a growing number of cases, there won't be a next flight until tomorrow, and you'll pay $100 to change the ticket. The Times predicts bumping is here to stay, as airlines struggle to make sure every seat is full to minimize seat mile costs. But they'll have to manage it carefully. Effective last month, if you're bumped involuntarily from a domestic flight and you're not accommodated on another within 2 hours, you're required to be paid $800. That's up from the $400 rate in effect from many years before. The airlines are responding to the higher stakes. Last summer, Delta bumped more than 3 of every 10,000 passengers. That's more than double the industry average. This year, new technology has been employed to more accurately predict no-shows and cut that rate in half. No matter how refined the software becomes, though, there's always going to be that chance you'll be bumped from a flight you needed to catch to make some critical job interview or your daughter's wedding. One alternative to bumping might be charging you for your seat whether you show up or not, and letting it stay empty if you don't make it. The airlines would love it. Empty seats would save weight. What do you think? Would it be worth it? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear comments to an Oshkosh audience from FAA Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.